Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for DebtWire Municipals. Today's podcast title is PREPA's Perpetual Bankruptcy. I'm joined by my DebtWire colleague, Simone Barabeau. Simone, always good to have you on the podcast.
Great to be here.
And I want to welcome back Javier Balmaceda, who's a senior policy analyst at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Javier, welcome. Good to have you.
Good to be here, and it's good to see you again, Paul and Simone. Always good to be back with the former crew.
Yes, for those that aren't aware, Javier used to work with us, and then he left us to do bigger and better things with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. But Javier, before we get started, well, one thing for the audience, in case they aren't aware, PREPA is an acronym for Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority. And we're going to be talking today about a bankruptcy that's been going on for PREPA for quite a while. But before we get into that, Javier, why don't you give us a little bit about your background?
Sure. It's not going to be too long, but I've been working for a think tank, a policy institute here in D.C. It's called the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. We focus mainly on the federal budget. And within the federal budget, we look at essentially what is the safety net, all the major economic and health security programs in the country. And we advocate for those programs to be adequately funded and to operate as they should. So I've been doing that for 8 years. I can't believe it's been that long. And before that, I was a Muni Bond alum with DebtWire. And it's great to be back because, you know, there's not that many people I can nerd out about Muni Bonds. So it's really good to be here with you.
Well, Javier, you're leaving out a couple of things here that I think are important. Didn't you go to the University of Chicago for some sort of degree?
Oh, academic credentials. Yes, Paul. I did a bachelor's at Williams College in poli-sci. And then I got a master's degree in public policy from double master's. From the University of Chile and one from the University of Chicago.
Well, I just figured that'd be important for our audience to know as well, because, you know, one of the reasons I felt it was so important to have you on here to talk about Puerto Rico is that you're from there, you're native from there, you know about the island inside and out, one of the smartest people I know. So I'm looking forward to this conversation today. Now, Simone, I want to transition back to you. A little backdrop here for our audience. Back in 2015, the governor at the time, Alejandro Garcia Padilla, made this statement that kind of will forever be associated with Puerto Rico. The debt is not payable. And that was about all of the debts that Puerto Rico had at the time and still have in respects now. And from that point, a couple years later, we get the bankruptcy proceedings that have started. I'm not going to go over everything, but what's important to know is that since 2015, we're on our fifth governor. Now, keep in mind, the governors have four-year terms, so that should tell you that there's been a couple of things that have been happening on the gubernatorial level. And we're also at the last stage of this bankruptcy, because there's been several others, and now we have PREPA going through its bankruptcy. And Simone, can you just give us an overview of like where we started from and where we are now with PREPA?
Yes. Firstly, I would take a little bit of issue with you saying we're at the last stage of bankruptcy. We're in the last of the five bankruptcies. I don't know that we're in the last stage of it. We'll have to see if that ends up being true or not. But if you, as you just did, if you go back to where this restructuring started 8 years ago, PREPA, ironically, was going to be a blueprint for how the other restructurings were done. There was a restructuring support agreement in place with bondholders from about 2018 to 2022. And so that fell apart in 2022 when the oversight board, which at the time was, as you mentioned, there were lots of governors, so they were under a new administration and they had some new members. They decided to argue that the $8 billion some odd bonds that were outstanding weren't secured, which was something unsecured creditors had been arguing since basically the beginning. So since then, there's been a bunch of litigation. And as it stands today, the courts have found that the bonds are secured. At which point the oversight board said, fine, the bonds are secured, but the security stream for the bonds, which was the authority's net revenues, is zero. It's worth nothing because the board didn't include necessary capital work to keep the system afloat in calculating the net revenue before this point, and now they're going to include it. So once you put that in, they say there's no net revenue left. So where does that leave us? President Trump fired 6 of the 7 board members, oversight board members, in August. In response, Judge Laura Taylor Swain, who's overseeing this bankruptcy, and also she oversaw the 4 other bankruptcies and the however many voluntary restructurings, has indefinitely delayed ongoing litigation. The BlackRock Group, which was a linchpin of the most recent iteration of the oversight board's plan of adjustment, it was set to lend PREPA $1.6 billion more dollars. I think they had about $2 billion in holdings. They're set to stop supporting the agreement unless the plan of adjustment is confirmed by today, which obviously is not going to happen. This is being recorded on October 1st. So right now we've got no oversight board. President Trump hasn't replaced the members he fired or indicated how or when he'll do so. We've also got a lawsuit with 3 board members saying they should not have been fired because he had to do so for cause, and they argue that he didn't. So that's litigation that may need to move forward before there's even a board back, and you need a board to approve any plan of adjustment. We've got no deal. There's virtually no bondholder support left, although there are some other creditors like the Unsecured Creditors Committee and Fuel Line lenders that still appear to be supporting the current plan of adjustment. And we've got bondholders saying, hey, we support a pause while the board is reconstituted, but we want to get this moving. And we've got the oversight board spending $250 million on professional fees for the restructuring of PREPA alone. So to sum it up, there's a lot of money out the door, and we appear further from any restructuring than we were even when the bankruptcy began.
Well, Simone, thank you for that comprehensive explanation of where things were and where they are now. Javi, I don't know if you remember, you were on our podcast about 2 years ago, and we had a conversation about PREPA and Puerto Rico, big picture. From your perspective, particularly if we think about since that time, 2 years ago when you were here, I believe that was July 2023, what do you see with operations that have been going on with PREPA?
I think, to Simone's point, not much has changed. And in fact, I think it's quite the opposite of anything. Things have, in a way, gotten worse. If you look at operations, for instance, the latest metrics show that in terms of reliability of the system, what LUMA and New Fortress are providing in terms of generation and distribution and transmission, the numbers are not good. You actually have a decrease in reliability for the system when compared to previous years. So that's certainly not good. And in addition to that, you have a rise in cost. So you have a more costly and more expensive service and a less reliable service. And I think that about sums it up for the last 2 years, I would say.
And big picture, where do you see operations going for PREPA?
I think, well, that's the million-dollar question, right? I think the outlook is bleak. I want to be, you know, honest with you and the listeners. I think you have, on the generation side, you have a company, which is New Fortress Energy, subsidiary of that company. You know, when you look at what's going on financially for New Fortress, it's a company that's essentially in default. It's already restructuring part of its debt. It's talking to creditors to ask for additional time to pay senior notes. And when you look at the performance on the island, you know, there's all sorts of problems with the fleet. You know, this company was brought in to do 2 things, essentially. One, it was supposed to fix and upgrade the existing generation fleet. And it was supposed to innovate to be able to accommodate natural gas. And the promise of natural gas was it is a cheaper and more reliable fuel source. So, you know, none of that has materialized yet. There is a possibility, if you wait long enough, and maybe, you know, long enough, that that could actually happen. But we've been seeing this movie for about 4 years now, and things have only gotten worse. In fact, I don't know if you saw, but just 2 days ago, there was a problem with New Fortress and the tugboat operators in San Juan. And because of that dispute, there was a lack of natural gas coming into Puerto Rico, and 160,000 clients were left powerless. That's certainly not a good sign. When you look at LUMA, which is the company that handles transmission and distribution, I would say, again, you have a problem with reliability and service. As I was telling you a second ago, the amount of outages in Puerto Rico has increased over the past 3 years. And, you know, the performance of Luma, I think, is not great. And I think, you know, the many different governors have pointed this out. I think this latest administration in Puerto Rico under Governor Jennifer González, I think they're a little bit more aggressive about policing Luma. And I think certainly there are some big disputes that have actually gotten litigious at this point. And I think there might be a desire from the current administration to get rid of Luma. That is different from New Fortress, which despite its poor performance, just managed to sign a contract with the new administration for 7 years. And granted, that contract still needs to be approved by the oversight board. But I think there seems to be more willingness from the current administration to work with New Fortress than there is with Luma, at least at this point.
And you mentioned Luma and litigious. There's some alliteration going on here, but there's some litigation. Can you speak to that a little bit, this adversary proceeding going on with Luma?
Yeah, so there's indeed a big dispute going on between the administration in Puerto Rico and Luma. I think this all started with a pretty hefty letter that the current energy czar, Josue Colon, who was appointed by Jennifer González, he sent a letter to Luma in July. It's an 81-page letter, essentially detailing many different places where the administration believes that Luma has breached its management contract with Puerto Rico. And obviously, Luma does not agree with many of the things that are detailed in that letter, so much so that they decided to file a lawsuit against Puerto Rico. And I think to summarize the entire dispute, I think what Luma would want done is to resolve this via litigation, and the government of Puerto Rico wants to stay within the bounds of the contract, and they argue that this is all one big technical dispute. And I think, in essence, what the government of Puerto Rico is attempting to do is trying to get rid of Luma contractually without further litigation. And Luma obviously has resorted to the courts because they fully disagree with that. I should also mention that process-wise, bringing in a new operator at this stage of the game, not that it's warranted or not, right, beyond that particular matter, it would be very complex, right? You have a very vulnerable, unreliable grid, and it's been hard even switching over from a public grid to a private grid. So finding a new replacement for Luma would be a costly process, drawn out process. And I don't know how quickly the administration can do that. So we'll see.
My last question for you, Javier, is to bring it down to, let's call it a local level in terms of for island residents / customers. We've been covering this situation even before 2015. And with anything that might go on for a decade or longer, fatigue is a possibility that could set in just from covering it, because it's just been an ongoing situation with lots of twists and turns. What about for island residents? What are they thinking about PREPA on the ground? What are they thinking about whether or not there could be rate hikes that could be coming in their future? That's probably a separate question just in terms of like whether the rate hikes are doable. But let's start with just island perception of what's going on with PREPA.
Well, the name of the podcast, right, Perpetual, I think that word is really apt here, because I think that's the way it feels at this point. And you know, to Simone's initial point, this has been a long process. And I can't say that we've so far recorded any progress here. People on the ground, obviously, they care the most about the power bill, how much you're paying every month for that power bill. Obviously, people are aware of the litigation and the bankruptcy. I think people at a very general level are also cognizant of the implications of what happens in that bankruptcy process. But I think in general terms, people are just looking at that power bill that comes in every month. And as I was telling you all earlier, what's happened is you've had an increase in cost, and paying a hefty power bill every month gets really hard to do, not only for individuals, but also on the corporate end for industry and companies that operate in Puerto Rico. And in addition to that, you have a less reliable service. So I think people generally are tired, fatigued, as you were saying. And I think people are also immensely angry and frustrated because there's been all these promises that if we privatize the system, things are going to get better. That hasn't happened. There's been promises about we're going to resolve the bankruptcy now. And it's been 8 years and nothing seems to be progressing. And again, for people on the ground, it's about that power bill and it's only gotten more expensive and the service less reliable.
So I want to, I mean, obviously, this is a bankruptcy. Bondholders have a perspective. Board, at least up until the time the members got fired, had a different perspective. I just want to get a sense from you, just looking at the numbers. Can customers afford any kind of significant rate hike if that was to be part of how PREPA has to pay down their liabilities? Is that sustainable, any kind of rate hike?
The short answer is no. I mean, Puerto Rico already has one of the most expensive electrical grids in the country. And don't take it from me. If you look at the economic consensus in Puerto Rico, and you have many different reputable economists that have filed different briefs in the bankruptcy, and what everyone agrees is that at this point, significantly increasing the power rates in Puerto Rico would have an incredibly negative impact on Puerto Rico. I mean, you're talking about a place that has a significantly high poverty rate. It's around 40%. That's more than three times the national average. And so the prospect of increasing, further increasing costs of electricity in Puerto Rico are untenable, I would say. And again, you know, don't take it from me. This has been amply recorded and studied by many different economists in Puerto Rico.
And it's not just residential rates that are a problem, is it? It's industrial rates too. I mean, if you're trying to draw people to come to Puerto Rico,
yeah,
you may need an electric grid that's reliable and also affordable if they can choose to work in a different jurisdiction, if companies can choose to operate in a different jurisdiction, I mean.
Yeah, I think that's the other big point, Paul. You know, I think what Simone is saying is incredibly true. There's also an opportunity cost of not being able to attract business and then potentially of scaring away existing businesses in Puerto Rico. And also, you know, there's already a track record of small and medium sized businesses in Puerto Rico going bankrupt because the power service is either A, unreliable, or B, too expensive, or C, a combination of both. And so to Simone's point, yeah, you have industrial and commercial implications as well.
So Javier, a couple of years ago, when you came on a podcast, I asked you a question about, could you see the end in sight? You know, I think I'm not going to ask that question again, because it sounds like, from what you're saying, that we still seem to be a long way off from getting to a resolution that will allow the island and bondholders to all go on in peace and harmony. But I really appreciate you and Simone coming on this podcast to give us a great perspective on what's going on with PREPA's bankruptcy. And to our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, commenting, and subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on the Muni Lowdown.